This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Brad Pitt has it. Woody Allen, maybe not so much. Michael Jordan, Muhammad Ali, yes. David Wells, maybe not. In Hollywood, it's called the it factor. And in France, je ne sais quoi, which translates literally as I don't know what, but means a great deal more. Charisma is one of those qualities that defines itself. We know it when we see it. Bill Clinton, Ronald Reagan, Princess Diana, John Kennedy, that very special person who commands the attention of everyone in the room. We'll speak with a couple of people who've studied charisma about what it is and whether or not it can be taught, and we'll talk with actor Evan Handler, and some people say he's got it. Later in the hour, the picture that infuriated the Marine Corps and which raises difficult questions about respect for the dead and censorship. But first, who do you know that's charismatic? What makes them that way? Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email us talk at npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. And joining us now from member station WNPR in New Haven, Connecticut, is Mark Oppenheimer, editor of the New Haven Review and a columnist for the Ideas section of the Boston Globe. And thanks for being with us today.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
And you've studied and written about charisma. What's your definition?
Well, I think that, I mean, there are many, and it's been studied throughout time, and I think that the best one I've come across in reading and writing about it is one that Joseph Roach, who teaches theater studies at Yale, came up with for a recent book of his that he called It. And so he says it is it, but okay, what is it? Mm-hmm. He said it's the ability to convey two opposite qualities at the same time, so to kind of convey to your audience contradictory impulses, both strength and warmth, for example, or grandeur, but also humility.
Give us sort of an example of somebody.
Absolutely. I mean, a terrific example would be Princess Diana, right? Here is someone who, on the one hand, was royalty. I mean, it doesn't get grander than that. On the other hand, she was royalty who was cast off. She was royalty who was on the outs with her own family, and she had a tremendous kind of poignant vulnerability to her public persona. So people perceived her both as the princess in the room, but also as the person who understood their pain because they knew what she had been through. And her ability to allow both of those things to shine through, to always be the princess, but also to allow the pain to be very real and very present, was charismatic. She could have faked it, right? She could have, you know, suffered internally and not allowed the pain to shine through. And then she would have been much more like the queen, who's just grand, but she's not a very charismatic figure, I'd argue.
That's an interesting idea, that sort of duality. Does beauty have something to do with it?
Well, absolutely. I mean, beauty can be one of the poles of it, right? So if you're incredibly beautiful but also long-suffering, and that, of course, is the quality that a lot of movie stars would convey, or a lot of divas in the opera, which is, on the one hand, they're on top of the world. They're very, very beautiful. They have the most beautiful voice. On the other hand, if you know anything about Maria Callas's life, or if you sense it in her portrayals of characters, you know that there's tremendous pain to go along with the beauty. So it makes her much more approachable and lovable and charismatic than someone who's simply gorgeous but somewhat icy.
Picasso, for example, might be considered charismatic, but he wasn't certainly beautiful.
No, of course not. And so, you know, beauty isn't one of the necessary qualities, but, you know, here Picasso was someone who was tremendously talented, but also, of course, had a very disrupted personal life, and whose pictures were not necessarily gorgeous to look at in the traditional sense. So there's a complexity to charisma, I think, is the important point, that there are at least a couple things going on in the persona of someone for that person to have charisma.
And we think about it, I guess, in the current context, a lot in terms of politics.
Absolutely. I mean, Barack Obama, I think unquestionably, whether you like him or don't, is a charismatic figure. And here is someone who has so many dualities. I mean, where to even begin? Racially, he's both black and white. He is someone who has religiously was raised irreligious, but now is a Christian. He's someone who has somewhat exotic roots geographically, Hawaii, or but then he's an urbanite, a Chicagoan now. I mean, he seems to be all things to all people. He's containing just by virtue of who he is, not through any artifice, although there, of course, is artifice in all politicians. But even if you stripped away any artifice, by virtue of his biography, he's someone who seems to contain all sorts of contradictions, and that you can't buy that. It's priceless.
Is this something? Well, it would seem to tend to drive people, if you've got it, if you're born with it, if you have it, into a couple of selected professions. You'd think, obviously acting and politics.
Absolutely. I mean, people who are charismatic tend to be praised or rewarded very early on in their lives for that charisma. So, for example, if you're very, very beautiful and also have other features that combine with that beauty to make you charismatic, you will be someone who plays with that beauty, who uses that beauty, who doesn't run from it, because it's what wins you praise and reward early in life. Similarly, if you're a superb speaker, if you have tremendous public poise, why wouldn't you go into a profession that rewards that kind of speaking? You know, if you've been very good at high school debate, it's not a shock that a lot of high school debaters end up lawyers. I'm one of the very few I know who escaped that fate. I mean, I was a high school and college debater. I did not go into the law, but I could tell you of dozens and dozens who did. And
sure, lawyers are in that sense performers in the courtroom, yeah.
That's right. And the best lawyers are not the ones who, if we're talking about litigation, if we're talking about performing in the courtroom, charisma isn't necessarily just being the best prepared or the smartest. It has a lot to do with forging that connection with the jury. And how do you forge that connection with the jury? You have to seem as if, on the one hand, you know more than they do, but on the other hand, you understand who they are and their pain and their problems.
And you're hardly, as you pointed out, the first person to study this, not just Mr. Roach, but a lot of pretty famous people.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things that we know about charisma is how little we've known about it over the centuries. The Renaissance Italians studied it, and their word that comes closest to it is sprezzatura, which, of course, is a kind of effortless grace. The person who walks into the room and without even trying to do anything becomes the center of attention. And the sociologist Max Weber studied it very famously in the context of political figures, and he referred to charisma as one of the ways that a political movement could get started.
Let's see if we get some listeners involved in the conversation. We're talking about charisma. Who do you know who's got it, and what makes them that way? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. We're speaking with Mark Oppenheimer, the editor of the New Haven Review, who wrote about it for a piece in the Boston Globe. Let's talk with Norman. Norman's on the line with us from Cleveland, Ohio.
Hi. Fascinating subject, because I used to think about this because I had my ego shot down a number of times when I was playing with a rock and roll band in Cleveland in the 80s that had, quote, groupie status. And gals would come over to me and say, would you introduce me to the guitar player? does the bass player have a girlfriend? And it bit me in so badly that once I remember saying, well, I'll introduce you to the guitar player, but really I think he likes them a little slimmer and a little cuter, because it really did, you know, it did me in. And I don't, you know, those weren't the women that I would normally want to chase around, but it would be nice to be asked.
Yes, it would.
I don't know what had it in, what they had it in. If they, when we were on the road, they never would get hotel rooms because they always had people and mostly female houses that they would stay in.
And what was it about the guitar player that made him have it?
I don't know. Lead singer as well. They were all fairly good looking, but I wouldn't say striking. But there is what did you say the French word? Je ne sais quoi.
Je ne sais quoi.
There was just a vibe that they put out. I mean, they were great guys. We still have reunions. And kind of relive the old days, but when I joined a band that catered more to, you know, what do you want to say, hippies, that I did better. You know, that was the kind of vibe that I put out.
Well, at least you scored with some people.
Well, if you want to call it scoring, I mean, I don't chase around that much because I know people who listen, but it was just very, very interesting, and this is something that I often have thought about. So I'm having a great time listening today.
Well, you might take heart from this email from Amy in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Charisma, who needs it? Awkwardness and clumsiness are way more entertaining. All the charismatic people are just making it harder for the rest of us oddballs.
You're right.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call, Norman. And interestingly, we got this other email from Janice. I think it's, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. I believe that charisma has a definite manipulative aspect. Why has a person learned that attribute? Graciousness is elegant, but charisma always has a way of manipulating. Do you think that's right?
You know, I'm... I'm not sure that's right. I think charisma, like anything else, any other quality in the world, can be used for good or for ill. And so certainly there are people who use their charisma to manipulate. But I think that people who are deeply authentic that can be charismatic for their authenticity. I think that, you know, I actually would question, of all the litany that you read off before, Neil, about who has charisma, who mm-hmm. doesn't. The Woody Allen one to me was kind of interesting because here's someone who obviously his affect and his persona are nerdy, right? Mm-hmm. And they're not classically sexy. On the other hand, he certainly is compelling in a way that I think a lot of other nerds aren't, or a lot of other brainiacs, a lot of other intellectuals. And I think there's something about his authenticity, his willingness to be himself that plays as a kind of strength. So on the one hand, obviously, you look at him, you'd say, here's the guy who doesn't get the girl. And not just look at him, but listen to him. I mean, he talks like such a nebbish, right? Mm-hmm. Or in his roles he does as an actor. On the other hand, his willingness to be so out there with that, his willingness to be that guy and to let it work for him, I think can be very, very powerful. And, you know, I'm not sure where the evil in that is. I'm not sure that charisma is always used in the sense of, you know, the Leni Riefenstahl movies of the Nazis, right? It's not all the big rally of people being robbed of their free will.
We expect a call from David Wells now. Let's see if we can get Patience on the line. Patience with us from Paducah, Kentucky.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I would like to point out that I think charisma is something from our most basic nature. The reason that I think that is because I believe animals can have charisma. And I think the poster child for animal charisma was the horse Secretariat.
Secretariat had charisma. I'll give you that. I saw Secretariat run, and I'd agree with you. But is it?
I was in the paddock at Saratoga when he was a 2-year-old, virtually unknown. The paddock at Saratoga is full of wealthy, fancy horse people that have seen beautiful horses all their life. And when that horse walked into the paddock, conversation simply stopped.
Yeah, Big Red was something. Big Red was something. we'll talk about the question of whether it's hardwired and whether it can be learned when we come back after a short break. So, Patience, thanks for raising the question.
Thank you.
We're talking with Mark Oppenheimer of the New Haven Review and the Boston Globe about charisma. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. However you define charisma, the good news is that some now argue it can be taught, and we'll get some tips in a pro in a moment, and whether you're charismatic or not, do you think it can be taught, or is charisma born and not made? Tell us your story, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also check out our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Our guest is Mark Oppenheimer. He's the editor of the New Haven Review and wrote a column called Charm School for the Ideas section of the Boston Globe. And in that article, he quotes John Neffinger. He's a partner with KNP Communications, a firm that teaches public speaking. And he joins us now from our bureau in New York. And John Neffinger, nice to have you to Talk in the Nation today.
Thanks, Neil. Great to be with you.
And I understand that your definition, well, might be Oprah Winfrey.
Oprah Winfrey is definitely a good exemplar of what it is that we're talking about with charisma. It's interesting hearing this conversation because I think there is a slightly different thing that we're going for than what Mark has been talking about. The vulnerability piece that he's talking about with people like Woody Allen, actually, mm-hmm. and also Princess Diana, is not something that it's not something we're usually brought in to teach, put it that way. Maybe Howard Fine or some other acting coaches, that's more of a priority for them. But we're working with folks who are either leaders of organizations or politicians trying to, obviously trying to make sure their demeanor reassures people that that they're in charge, that they're going to get the job done. And Oprah really is a wonderful example of that. What we look at is, and Mark mentioned this earlier, strength and warmth. Because, we have to find some way to break down this complex and enigmatic it thing into something that we can get our brains around. And we found that this combination of strength and warmth really does get through at least most of what people are getting at when they talk about charisma.
And is this a verbal communication or is it nonverbal?
Well, it's largely nonverbal, and that's very important to see. It's the strength and warmth that you're projecting with your body, with your facial expressions, and with your tone of voice. But it is verbal, too. I mean, take couple of famous charismatic leadership utterances, right? Ask not what our country, what your country can do for you. It's very much a bracing challenge. And so there's a strength element to it. But what you can do for your country, it's this idea of the greater good, because the leader's role is to watch after the whole group, to be strong enough to face down external threats, but also, on the other hand, to actually care about the people in the group so that they're not just a tyrant.
And as you try to teach this to people who were presumably just as skilled as communications as you or me or anybody else in the audience,
sure.
What kinds of nonverbal gestures do you emphasize?
Sure. Well, strength you can think about as being projected primarily through your posture. So standing up straight, you know, which used to be kind of one of those things that got taught to children somewhere along the way by someone. That's a big piece of it. The way you move, and it's not so much being forceful to demonstrate strength. If anything, it's moving in a more controlled, deliberate manner. Think of the word poise. That really conveys what you're seeing when you see someone move gracefully in a way that projects strength that speaks to other people on a gut level. For warmth, on the other hand, as you can imagine, smiling is the A number one thing. And making sure that you smile in a way that's not too submissive. That's the problem. As Mark pointed out earlier, strength and warmth can sometimes be at war with one another. If you're trying to dial up your strength, you probably look a little less warm, come across a little less warm than you might otherwise, and vice versa. But there are ways, and in fact, Ronald Reagan, who you mentioned earlier, and Bill Clinton, had a very particular way of smiling that conveys both strength and warmth at the same time. Their mouth is smiling in the traditional smiley face gesture, right? But around their eyes, there's an intent look, almost a flinty or steely look to their eyes. And it, you know, if you actually break it out, it's the lower eyelids are flexed, like they're kind of squinting. And that by itself projects the strength to balance out the warmth that you see on their mouth. Reagan and Clinton wore those expressions around, and wear, in Bill's case, obviously, constantly. And that is their default facial expression, and that's a very powerful thing for them. Yeah. It's projecting this reassurance.
Mark Oppenheimer, does that duality work in the equation that you were citing earlier, the strength and warmth?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that, as John points out, you know, he's dealing primarily in his profession with people who want to be oratorically strong. And I think it is the central duality of people who want to be strong orators, who want to be strong public speakers. As John points out, I think he's absolutely dead on. When we look at characters who are more like Princess Diana or Woody Allen, strange to yoke them together in any way. But if we were to, right, you know, their charisma is projected on a different stage, and their dualities are going to be different because they're trying to persuade people through the persona of the royal or the persona of a stage actor or a screen actor. So there are different things they're trying to convey. And now, interestingly, these change over time, right? If you looked at actors from the 1930s, 40s, and 50s, they were much more going for just the kind of strength and warmth combination, the kind of charisma that would play very, very well if you were president. If you look at all the great, especially male screen stars.
Clark Gable, that kind of thing, yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely. Gregory Peck, that sort of thing. But we live in an era in which, in our arts anyway, there's more of a premium on male vulnerability than there was 50 years ago. So that has changed the equation for charisma a bit, I think.
Well, joining us now from his home in Los Angeles is Evan Handler, an actor and the author of It's Only Temporary, The Good News and the Bad News of Being Alive. Many of you saw him on HBO's Sex and the City and in the more recent movie. And you might say, yeah, he's got charisma. Evan, thanks very much for joining us.
I'm pleased to be here, Neil, though I feel like you're really setting me up for a fall introducing the essence of charisma.
I didn't say the essence, but has anybody told you that you're charismatic?
People have told me that others have said it about me, but we're in dangerous territory here to have me speaking about my own charisma.
Well, yeah. As an actor, though, is this something that can be learned, can be taught?
I don't know that I'm the expert on that. I was surprised to get the call. I would guess if Variety published a chart of the most charismatic, there'd be a great deal of space between Will Smith and myself.
You know, Evan, I think you're being unfair to yourself. I mean, certainly the character that you play, the Sex and the City character, I mean, there's a guy, when you're parading around with your naked tush in season six, I mean, that is vulnerability, and yet you're the most, you have the most successful macho relationship in the show. I mean, you get Charlotte. You know, that seems to me exactly what we're talking about.
I think a lot of charisma is in the eye of the beholder. I mean, in the article that started the discussion, I know that King Charles II of England is held up as one historical embodiment of charisma, and as hard as I've tried, King Charles II just doesn't do it for me. I didn't like either of his albums when they came out at all. And I've always found him dull in conversation. You know, one time, my wife, when she heard I was going to talk today on the show, said, "Well, that's perfect. You have incredible charisma. I fell in love with you the minute I met you." A few years ago, I tried to chat up Minnie Driver at a movie premiere, and she could not have been less interested. So I really think, you know, each person's psychology determines who they're going to find charismatic.
Well, who do you think of as charismatic?
There's a long list. I mean, I mentioned Will Smith. You know, I would define it really as a powerful and inclusive expression of one's point of view. You know, Will Smith is a great example of someone whose positivity and joy at life and lust for life brings so many people in. And then you have a character like Louis Black, who has incredible charisma by, you know, unabashedly expressing his rage at hypocrisy in an inclusive way, in a way that doesn't put people off. And then there are people who probably don't like Lou at all. So to me, those types of figures. I mean, I think you'd also have to say, with all the talk about vulnerability, without endorsing his points of view, you know, Adolf Hitler was undoubtedly a charismatic personality.
And right. That's the dark side.
You numbers of people to his point of view.
And that's the dark side. You get some of these, you know, Jim Jones, people like that, and Adolf Hitler described as charismatic.
Well, right. And to Evan's point about inclusivity, when we watch those films of Hitler doing his thing back in the day, to me, he just looks like a crazy clown. He doesn't seem charismatic at all. But if you were living in Germany in a certain socioeconomic status, that could have spoken to you in a way that connected, that was warm to you. So your point, well taken.
Hence my eye of the beholder.
Yes.
Because there are still a few people rambling around Idaho who might find Adolf appealing.
Evan, we're going to let you get back to your charismatic existence.
Thank you so much, Neil. My charismatic existence has to do with sitting alone in an office for hours at a time.
Evan Handler, an actor and the author of It's Only Temporary, The Good News and the Bad News of Being Alive. He joined us by phone from his home in Los Angeles, sitting in a lonely room by himself.
Charismatically.
Thanks very much.
Listening to NPR.
Yes. Let's get Joyce on the line. And Joyce is with us from Green Valley in Arizona.
Oh, good afternoon. I had two friends who I think had charisma, and it was shown in different ways. The first one was a social worker that I worked with way back when in New York, and this woman was not at all attractive. In fact, everybody thought she was very homely. She was a typical plump Italian woman, but she emanated sex all over. The men patients loved her, the male staff loved her, and she got along very well with the women. And I don't know if she was aware of what she did, but she emanated sex. The other person was a very close friend of mine. She died a few years ago, who, again, was fairly plain-looking. She always had a smile on her face. Her eyes sparkled. She had a wonderful spirit, always very non-judgmental and cheerful. And she was the kind of person that when we went into Mexico to get medicines and then we had to stand in a long line while the customs looked over things, I always sent her first because she would charm socks off of them. And when they asked for her prescription, she always had it. I might have mine, I might not. But by the time they got to me, they were so charmed, they just whisked me on through. And this was repeated in a little different way on the way home when they had the check. Well, they still do have a checkpoint on I-19, and immigration always stops. And I always told Carla, smile so that we just get waved through. Not that we had anything, but I didn't want to be held up because usually the lines were long.
Well, Mark Oppenheimer, let me ask you about Joyce's points, one of which is charm, but the other one of which is sex. And sex certainly seems to play a role in this.
Well, it does. A lot of the most charismatic people are also very, very sexy. I don't think that they're the same thing, but you know, when given the choice of a assignation between with a sexy person, a charismatic person, or a non-charismatic person, you know, we'll choose an evening in the plaza with the charismatic person. The thing that Joyce said that I thought was really very interesting was when she talked about the her plump Italian friend's spirit, and that goes really to the heart of historically the debate about charisma, because the early Christians talked about it. I mean, the word charism in Greek, it means gift, and they thought charisma was a gift. I mean, Pentecostal Christians to this day will talk about charisma as the visitation of, you know, gifts like speaking in tongues or prophesying or healing, faith healing. That is charisma to them. And so there's a kind of mystical way of thinking about charisma that you just can't explain it. It's in the spirit. Maybe that's what it is with Secretariat. I'm not sure. But I have to think that if it's a horse giving it off, it's probably something just you can't pin it down. And then there's a sense that you could actually break it down rather scientifically.
And John Neffinger, I assume in your training, the sex part could get you into trouble. Charm, though, is pretty good.
Yeah, charm is great. And, you know, maybe I'm a cynic here, but I'm definitely looking for the constituent parts, because while we see it as this complex, mysterious, magical thing, the effect is produced by people doing ordinary things, right? They're standing up straight. They're smiling. There's nothing crazy going on there. There's no special magic or potion or whatever to it. In the case of the caller's friends, I think very interesting, right? These are people who are specifically not that attractive and yet are very self-confident, right? So they're projecting a strength of character. They're to be taken seriously, even though they don't have the sort of matinee idol or, you know, kind of good looks. In some sense, that may actually work to their advantage, because if you have the matinee idol or female equivalent good looks, and you're projecting a whole heck of a lot of confidence in yourself, then interpersonally, that can create jealousies. That means you probably have to go in the extra mile to be that much warmer to make sure that people also find you likable in addition to finding you confident.
Well, John Neffinger, thanks very much.
Very valid, because Carla was no threat to anyone, but yet everybody flocked to her, and everybody was her friend. She was everybody's friend.
Mm-hmm. Joyce, thanks very much for the call.
Oh, you're welcome.
And John Neffinger, thank you very much for your time today.
You bet, Neil. Thanks.
John Neffinger is partner with KNP Communications with us from our bureau in New York, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get Sybil on the line. Sybil with us from Tempe, Arizona.
Hello.
Hi there.
I didn't actually think I would get online.
Well,
let me be brief about this. My name is Sybil Thornton. I'm a professor of history at Arizona State University, and 10 years ago, I wrote a book on charisma and community formation in Japan between 1300 and 1700. So let's leave out the religious aspect of this sometime. I think that what people do is concentrate too much on what people have, that is to say the Clintons, the Reagans, and whatnot, and not focus enough on what people want.
Really?
And that's a really critical area of looking at the relationship. Charisma is a relationship of mutual interdependence and an exchange of power. And what you see in these relationships, especially on the political side, for example, is you get something from Clinton. Clinton gives you something that you can then turn around and use to make your own relationship.
And that changes over time, as we were mentioning.
It changes over time. It's culturally determined. I mean, you know, what Princess Diana does in 1900 and between 1900 and 80, I mean, some of the things she got into in her early years would not have gone over in 1879,
Yeah. That relationship part, Mark Oppenheimer, that's interesting, the exchange.
Yeah, and Joseph Roach definitely points to that in his book. A great example of that, I think, about how it changes over time, because people's needs change over time, even if the charismatic figure, him or herself, doesn't. A great example of that might be John McCain. Again, say what you will about his politics, or obviously he's fighting a different battle now than he was 8 years ago when he ran for president. But the sense of him as the maverick, as the crusading, I would say charismatic outsider, which came so much from his sort of brusque speaking manner, the way he holds himself, always with that memory of the war injury in his posture, that was much more effective 8 years ago than I think it's proving to be now. Part of it is that he's gotten older, but, you know, as we know from Reagan, age is not necessarily a barrier. Part of it is a lot of Americans, for their charisma fix, whether they agree with Obama's politics or not, the kind of charisma fix that Americans are craving at this point in time is more Obamian, I would say, than McCainian.
Well, we'll find out in November, won't we?
We will.
Sybil, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Interesting point. John Mark Oppenheimer is the editor of the New Haven Review and a columnist for the Ideas section of the Boston Globe with us today from member station WNPR in New Haven, Connecticut. Thanks very much for your time today.
Thank you.
Coming up, the controversy over a photograph of three Marines killed in Iraq and difficult questions about respect for the dead and censorship. We'll talk with the photographer next. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.